And good evening, everybody. Welcome to Hoops HD's Under the Radar podcast, the podcast where we focus in on all the teams that nobody else other than maybe David Griggs and I only are talking about.
That's why we're here.
Well, over 200 teams here that we talk about every week. But this is our Under the Radar podcast where we very quickly, what it means to be under the radar is to not be in one of the major conferences, which is the ACC, Big 10, Big 12, Pac-12, SEC, Big East, and we also American, the Atlantic 10, and the Mountain West are normally multi-bid conferences. They are also not under the radar. You also can't be a national brand, which means Gonzaga and BYU are also not under the radar. But joining me, as always, is David Griggs. David, how are you tonight?
I'm doing really well tonight, Chad. I always hate this time of year because we're entering a period to where tomorrow there are no basketball games.
Yeah, there's going to be over the next 3 days a total of 5 games, 4 of them on Christmas Day in the final round of the Diamond Head, and only 1 game on Saturday. So you're going to be needing to hit that bottle a lot this next few days, David.
Yes, and a little bit later in the show, we're going to tell you how to use your time productively since there's no basketball tomorrow, aren't we, Chad? We have a little activity for everybody.
Yes, we are. And if you're a fan of a team that we've been paying a lot of attention to this year, you're going to want to listen to the entire podcast because we will be getting to them a little later on. But I want to start somewhere else, David, and that is by, with Christmas coming up, I wanted to wish you a Mele Kalikimaka, Hawaiian for Merry Christmas. As we are watching the Diamond Head Classic, or watching as we record this, we're in between games right now, but was a very happy, I guess, and a sad Christmas present that the NCAA gave the University of Hawaii this week.
Yeah, it's mixed feelings. I thought the penalty was well deserved, and I also thought it was fair that it doesn't go into effect until next year, because who isn't guilty of anything is the current players, and they would have been the ones punished the most had the postseason ban kicked in. It was excessive entertainment. It was multiple level one and level two violations. I don't remember the specifics, but hotel rooms for recruits, which falls under the category of excessive entertainment. Was there problems with certification as well, or was it? Am I imagining that?
I would have to double check on that. I don't have that information offhand, but I know there was the recruiting issues with excessive entertainment, whose hotel rooms being paid for by former head coach Gabe Arnold.
Yeah. 3-year show cause for Gabe Arnold. No one has, I mean, he certainly earned it, and good for him and good for the NCAA for handing it down. 3 years probation for Hawaii with a scholarship reduction and a 1-year postseason ban, which is next year, which will undoubtedly also include the Big West tournament as well, wouldn't you think?
I would think so, especially because the Big West, being a 9-team conference, only lets the top 8 in. It would make a lot more sense to allow the 8 eligible teams in and just leave Hawaii out. And they do that, I think, just because they don't want to add the extra day into the tournament. So I think that's what we'll see. And we've seen that before. We've had teams, I believe, may not have been a postseason ban from the NCAA, but may have been an APR ban in the past few years here from the Big West, so that team was excluded.
Yeah.
They had made this announcement yesterday afternoon, right before the morning, with the Northern Iowa-Hawaii game was at night. But had they come out, and NCAA come out and said before, on the same day as a game, that, hey, guess what, you're out of the postseason this year, I think that the players would have been really deflated going into that game. And yeah, it would have shown on the court, and I think Northern Iowa could have won that game and won it easily.
Right, and I have to confess something here. I did not realize that the ban was starting next year, and I'm watching the game, and I'm like, wow, what a spirited crowd and group of players. I mean, this is a lot more positively than I would have been reacting. I'd probably be throwing a fit and feeling cheated had something like that just happened to me. Little did I know that you actually corrected me today, and I had to go back and change some of what I had written. The ban begins next year. I like that decision. I think that the ban is warranted, but I also like that they it's rare that I say this. I like that move. What do you think of that, Chad? Do you think they should have slapped it on him now, or?
I do like the move, among other things. I mean, I'd hate to see it happen, but if a player is thinking about possibly transferring out of Hawaii, they'll get the chance without having to lose out on a chance to be of a year in the postseason. Hopefully Hawaii players are not thinking about that, but it also tells these kids, hey, you're already out to a very good start this season. We're going to let you go through this year. let you do what you need to do this year. And next year, you'll know at least going into the season that you're not really playing for anything.
Right.
And I think that it showed in the court. I think the reason why, one of the reasons why these players were so excited was they knew that this pending problem that they were worried about, that maybe we won't be postseason eligible this year, is not an issue. You don't have to worry about it. You can play in the Big West tournament. You've looked like an NCAA tournament team last year. You almost made it. You're looking like you maybe won this year. Go for it.
Right.
And like we said, it turned into a fairly big win. Hawaii picking up the home court win over a Northern Iowa team that had been just coming off of a win over Iowa State. So
yeah, and that was kind of predictable. We'll get to the Missouri Valley here in a little bit, but I think sometimes, especially when it's a young team that isn't top 10 world class, after a big win, you get your head in the clouds, and sometimes it's hard to get your feet back on the ground. And I think that's what Northern Iowa was going through a little bit. And Hawaii's really good. They're really good, especially at home. I don't believe they've lost at home yet.
No, they are. They are undefeated at home. 8-0 at home, 0-1 on the road. That's probably the only problem we have. They went to Texas Tech. They lost, but a lot of teams have been losing in Texas Tech. We'll talk a little bit more about them next week on our Hoops HD report. Hawaii now, while most of you are watching this probably sometime on Thursday, you're going to know the results of Hawaii's game against Oklahoma. So for the next couple seconds here, we're going to do something a little different. David, I thought we could try something here. I'm going to spend the next 10 seconds giving you what happened, giving you my report on Hawaii having lost. And, you know, they gave a game effort, but Oklahoma was just too much for them.
Okay. This is a futuristic,
thing. And just in case it was the other way, David, I'll let you give the 10-second report.
Well, it was, I mean, just an amazing spirited showing by Hawaii. Great crowd. It's a snake pit there. It's hard to win at home. Oklahoma, I think it was their first true road game or only their second one. So, yeah, big win for Hawaii and a big win moving forward if they want to land inside that bubble.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, with this Oklahoma win and the Northern Iowa win and a shot to win the Diamond Head tomorrow, they may have it. But now, everybody that just watched that, you can go back and just skip over whichever part that was wrong. Yeah. So. Let's move right through the other conferences here. We normally go right through them in alphabetical order. So we start up in the America East, I think we've been saying, you know, kind of, hey, it's going to be Albany and Stony Brook when we get to conference play, but there's not much else here. And I think we're still saying the same thing this week.
Yeah, this is going to be an exciting league once conference play starts. I would be curious to see if New Hampshire could kind of play their way up there. I think they're definitely the third best team, but Hawaii and Stony Brook are going to kind of run away from everybody else, and that is important because they're playing for home court advantage, which really adds stakes to these conference games. Everything else, it gets to a point to where once it's obvious you're not going to land inside the bubble, the rest of the out-of-conference is more or less just filler. Once the America East starts, I think it's going to be a fun league. It always is.
I think it will. Now, one win of note, Stony Brook had a nice win at home over Hofstra in the, I guess it's the Battle of Long Island there. I don't know if that's what it's called, but it should be, over the weekend. So that was a nice win for Stony Brook over a Hofstra team that we have liked out a little bit out of the Colonial. So I'm kind of leaning towards Stony Brook at this point, but it seems to be a team that always disappoints in the conference tournament as well.
Yeah, if you consider losing at home multiple times to poor seeded teams, disappointing. Yes, they typically do.
David, in the Atlantic Sun, I was a little disappointed last night. North Florida, I thought they had a good shot against, I thought, a pretty weak Arkansas team on the road last night, and instead they got their doors blown out.
Yeah, this conference has been – North Florida opened up in a big way with the win at Illinois. Now that's just looking eh. Them and NJIT have not done enough to, I don't even think, rise to the level of the NIT unless they finish first place. And you're looking 14-15 line if one of those teams wins the NCAA tournament. Now, North Florida, again, I'm still a big fan of Matt Driscoll.
I think you mean wins the A-Sun tournament, not the NCAA tournament.
But. Well, if they win the NCAA tournament, yes. Yeah, well, no, I mean, if they win the NCAA tournament, then obviously.
Okay, yes.
A-Sun tournament. Thanks, Chad. But, you know, I'm a big fan of their program. It's just that, I don't know. Do you see anybody here inside the NIT bubble even?
No, I mean, if somebody runs the table.
Yeah.
But again, if you run the table, then you're going to finish first in your conference and you're going to automatically get into the NIT anyhow. So, you know, run the table, but lose in the conference tournament. So I don't see really the question is, do you think the second place finisher has a shot at making the NIT? And I can't say that they do.
Correct. Yes.
Over in the Big Sky, we've been talking a lot of Sacramento State, and they've, over the past week, have not looked good, losing at Portland and then at Stanford. I mean, Stanford's a name brand, but not having a good season. To add to losses to South Dakota and UC Davis already, David, I'd argue the Big Sky is now going to Dayton, and it's going to be a ugly mess of a dogfight to see who gets that bid to go there.
Yeah, especially if the chalk holds in other conference. I mean, obviously, if you have a bunch of sixth and seventh place teams winning conference tournaments, they'll be in Dayton. But yeah, I mean, I don't think they've done anything too awful, but you know, they started off with a barrel of fire, and I think they've lost four of their last five. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. So, and they have Pacific Union. I thought that was a railroad. I guess it's a college. you know, coming up later in the week. But yeah, I agree with that.
I mean, the team that I'm still keeping an eye on is Weber State and probably and Montana, just because maybe historically these teams have been better, but neither has shown much yet this year. Right. Idaho sitting there with the best RPI in the conference and the best overall record at 8-5. And a home win over Washington State, but I don't know that I can believe in this Idaho team quite yet.
Yeah. 8 miles apart, Wazoo and Idaho. Yeah, that's kind of crazy.
Now, the good thing about Idaho is that I do play for the team.
Yeah,
we've discussed you do. In the past. The Big South, we've got High Point. We've talked about them, that we really like them. They had that heartbreaker of a loss.
Yeah.
And followed up with another heartbreaker loss in overtime to William & Mary on Monday night.
Yeah, really exciting game the other night. And again, I don't think William & Mary was a team I really liked coming into the season. We'll get to the Colonial here in a minute. I don't think they're quite bubble worthy yet, but this was just a fantastically exciting game. I don't know. The thing about High Point is that, I mean, unless they pretty much run the table, and maybe not even then, they don't really have to worry about the bubble. They just need to get into conference play and worry about finishing first or second in the standing so they can get home court advantage throughout the never mind.
The second best team. I think Campbell's going to be down in the standings. And maybe they could avoid having to play Campbell in the conference tournament. But right. Before we leave the Big South,
Winthrop? I'm really impressed with the way with the job Pat Kelsey's done. This Winthrop program was bubble-ish or better in the final years under Greg Marshall. It fell way off after that to the point to where they weren't even players in this conference. But Pat Kelsey, he's really gotten them turned around to where they've been a front runner the last 2 years. How much longer is he there?
And that's a problem when you have a conference like this. When a coach does step up and have a couple good seasons, you can pretty much bank on them being gone.
Yeah.
But the other team, the team I wanted to mention was UNC Asheville. Went into Georgetown and did what everybody seems to be doing the past week or so and beat the Hoyas this week.
Georgetown needs to stop scheduling under-the-radar teams. They're going to end up with a worse record against under-the-radar teams in bye games than they will against their regular conference schedule.
Well, unless they play one during the postseason, they're going to go down this season as being 0-2 against the Big South. So,
right.
Bradford and
kind of like Liberty. Asheville.
we just discussed the Big West. I guess we didn't really mention anybody else outside of Hawaii. Are you still looking at this Irvine team?
I am, as far as being one of the better teams in the Big West. I'm not as far as being a team that's really bubble worthy or, for that matter, under the radar top 10. But I do like them as much. I mean, I like them and I like Hawaii. And then I actually like this Long Beach team. And I know I say that every year. Their record, I think they only have four Div 1 wins. Their RPI will rise because their overall winning percentage will probably go from 300 till about 600 or 700 by the end of the year. They've looked good and they've looked reasonably competitive against what I think, and it's up for debate, is a rather tough schedule.
Yeah, they have a slightly tough schedule. I mean, there are five teams in the country with higher strengths of schedule than them. So, you know, they are not number one. But, I mean, they're sitting there with a four Div 1 wins and an RPI in the top 100 right now, despite that. So that just tells you how much that the schedule is helping them.
I hate to keep putting you on the spot, Chad, but what do you think of that strategy? What do you think of Dan Monson? Because he attempted to do that at Gonzaga as well. He didn't do it quite to this degree, but do you like what Long Beach does?
I actually am a big fan of it. I think you should have this attitude of, I will play anybody, anywhere, anytime. The guy who I think back of for the strategy was John Chaney when he was at Temple. That was absolutely his strategy. Playing in an Atlantic 10 that was, you know, maybe a two or three bid league at best, and had his teams consistently every year in the NCAA tournament, and they could be sitting there in the middle of January or beginning of February with a 500-ish record, run off six or seven wins in a row to pick up a good conference record, and boom, they're getting a bid. A lot of it is, you know, you didn't get too many wins, but you've scheduled such a strong strength of schedule, and you won a couple of them. Long Beach this year beat Seton Hall, beat BYU. Probably not going to be enough unless they go and beat Duke next week. But
it probably won't be unless they run the table in conference or do something like that. But from an RPI standpoint, and I realize that it's a general rating. It's not a power ranking. But, you know, 25% of it is your own record. So the biggest piece of it overall, you have more control over it than anybody. Essentially, one of your games counts for 10 of your opponent's games. And if you're somebody like that's way out there, like Xavier, for instance, their overall record is not going to get any better than what it already is. It can't. It's 100%. Long Beach's will improve significantly, and their RPI could get into the 30s. And we saw that happening last year. Now they tapered off at the end. But is this – I think Dan Monson likes it because it's exposure for the school. The losses don't really hurt you. If you pick up one or two of them and then you finish in first place in your league, like if you go 16-2 and 17-1, you're suddenly inside the bubble. My thing is, I think I like the aggressiveness, but I think they kind of overdo it. I thought Miami and Oakland overdid it, Miami, Ohio, under the Charlie Coles years. I like scheduling aggressive, but I think that this is almost too overwhelming. Virginia, Okie State twice, San Diego State, Colorado State, UCLA, Oregon, Arizona, Duke. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Well, but on the other hand, you got to remember, if you are in the ACC, you're going to get that type of schedule. It's going to come at the end of the year in the conference play.
Right.
If you're in the Big West and you schedule a lot of garbage and only one or two tough games, your conference schedule is going to help you. And if Long Beach next year schedules like this, and they happen to go 10-4 or 11-3 in non-conference play, guess what?
Oh, they'd be
unless they completely stink during the conference season, they're in the NCAA tournament.
Oh, they're a protected seed. If you win 11, if you won 11 games against a schedule like that, good grief. anyway, just wanted to get your thoughts on that because they seem to subscribe to this.
Over in the Colonial, we did just touch on this William & Mary team, had the very nice win over at home over High Point, has a game coming up with Central Michigan next week, another team that could be in the hunt for its conference championship. Is this who you're looking at? Are you looking at more at some of these other teams like that we've discussed, James Madison, Northeastern, Hofstra?
I still like William & Mary, but it isn't because of what they've done. I still just can't help but think they haven't played up to their ceiling yet, and I think Northeastern hasn't either. Northeastern has been hugely disappointing, so much so that like they might not get it back. But if you look, the loss to Miami is just mind-numbing. They lose to Western Michigan by a point. They lose to Michigan State badly, but that's forgivable. I don't know. I can't help but think that this is a good league that could have been better. James Madison has kind of rebounded now that they're at full strength. If someone runs away from this league, and there might be so much parity in rivalry that it can't happen, I can see them getting a team inside the bubble. But anything short of that, and I know that what you said in the preseason was that you didn't think anybody would run away from it. I think it's a one bid league, and unfortunately, because it's probably going to be a really exciting conference this year. And how about Charleston? Good grief. I'm more surprised by them than anyone else.
Yeah, Charleston off to a good start here under Earl Grant with a huge home win over LSU, but though everyone's beating LSU. But when I'm looking at some of the power ratings for the conference as a whole, on KenPom, the ninth rated conference better than Mountain West. In terms of conference RPI right now, they're eighth, better than both the Mountain West and the American. And that's the numbers that tell me that if a team can win an outright regular season championship, has a couple good wins like most of these teams did. I mean, with Hofstra, Northeastern, William Mary, they've all picked up at least a win of note in non-conference play. I think they're going to get some serious consideration. I'm not saying that we've got a team, we've got a two-bid league here, but I think the regular season champion, if they lose in the conference tournament title game, is going to get a lot of talk this year.
Yeah, I agree with that. And if, especially if somebody runs away from it, there's really no poison in this league other than Drexel. Now, again, if Drexel does something crazy, like finishes in the middle or higher, it's going to sink the league. But if the league can kind of run away from them, no one else is even below 500.
Well, and that's a pretty rare thing when you're talking about these under-the-radar leagues, to be sitting here at the end of December with only one team sub 500. We see that all the time in the power conferences, but not in a conference like the Colonial.
Right.
For the conference where we see plenty of teams under 500 is Conference USA. I don't even know what to say about this league at the moment, David. So if you want to take it.
Well, I like this Middle Tennessee team. They have a big game coming up Sunday, real big. And they've looked so much better than everyone else, including, I think, Louisiana Tech. I know La Tech is 10-2, but it's a little bit bloated up on cupcakes. I do think that if Middle Tennessee runs away with it, which they're certainly good enough to do, they will get a look. But, I mean, you have a couple of 100-ish ranked type teams in La Tech, UAB, and then you have a horribly disappointing Old Dominion team. That's inexplicable to me. As good as they were last year, as much as they had coming back, and as much as they added, how are they just 6-6? And then you just have, honestly, trash. Like, I mean, really, really bad. San Antonio, Florida Atlantic, Charlotte's been horrible. Southern Miss, North Texas. These are teams that are SWAC level programs.
Yeah, no, this team, and this is going to be the problem that a team like a Middle Tennessee is going to have, is that even if they run away with the conference, they're going to have wins that are going to actually probably hurt their power ratings.
Yeah.
When you go out and you beat San Antonio or you beat Southern Miss, it's not going to help you. And we're just talking about the Colonial. There's not very many teams that you're going to beat that are going to really hurt you like that. But in Conference USA, you're going to get them. My other problem with Middle Tennessee is I really think they needed that win at Georgia State the other night. They lost the game by 2 points. And I think that kind of could be, you know, we may be able to forgive the Murray State loss at the beginning of the season, but I don't know that we can forgive the Georgia State loss. And if they don't beat South Dakota State coming up this weekend, I think it'll be even worse for them. And they're really going to have to win the automatic bid at that point.
And it kind of is a shame that the basketball in this league is so bad. I mean, in its glory day, this was a multi-bid league.
It also had different members. So
it had different members.
It also had Louisville and Memphis and Cincinnati.
Marquette and Cincinnati. And and to see it as bad as it is, good God. I mean, this is 14-15 line bad again, which it was last year.
David, over in the Horizon League, I know Oakland gave Michigan State a hell of a game last night.
They did.
They took them to overtime. They had their shots to win the game. I think you're suddenly sold on this Oakland team, and I'd like you to try to sell me because I'm not. I think Michigan State. Oakland's notoriously given Michigan State tough games in this matchup.
They have.
And Michigan State coming into it without Denzel Valentine, needing to find a way to play without him. I think it took them a little while to get going here. I chalk this game more up to Michigan State than to Oakland actually being good. But
okay, you don't agree with me, so go ahead. Here's my take on Oakland. The paper is hurt by their first two games of the year. They went out to Colorado State, lost not badly, and then they went to Southern Illinois, lost not badly. But you can't praise starting out 0-2 against teams that are, I mean, if you can't beat a decent team, then you're not decent yourself. I guess what I'm looking at is since then, they blew past Alcorn, blew past Abilene Christian.
Winless.
Yes. Okay, but they blew by them. They went to Georgia and were right in the game, lost by four. They went to Robert Morris, blew them out. Went to Toledo and won handily, went to Washington and won convincingly, and then they took Michigan State to overtime. And I just look at them on the court. I think they're better on the court than what their paper indicates. I don't see them without the win yesterday, because they really – beating the number one team adds so much to your profile. And since they don't have that, I don't see them getting near the bubble, but I do see them making a lot of noise in this conference and being one of the better teams in it. Well, I like them a lot. I think they could be an NIT team.
Well, I think we'll find out about them come January 8th when they host Valparaiso. I do really like this Valpo team too at this point. They are sitting there with Ken Pom in the 29, RPI 24. Ken Pom has their defense as fourth in the nation. I really – really like this Valpo team. I love this Valpo team.
And I thought Valpo, I thought we had Valpo, which was inside the bubble, and then we had everybody else that was a mile from the NIT. I think Milwaukee's decent. I think Oakland's decent. And now I hate the Horizon League even more for changing their format, because what a fun race that would have been.
Well, I'll tell you what I really hate about it is, if you want to talk about a fourth place team, if you look at the RPI right now, they've got a number 64 RPI in the country. I know RPI is pretty meaningless still this early in the season. Only 6-4, but against the 13th strength of schedule of the country. That's Detroit. And guess where the conference tournament's going to be, David?
Well, yeah, it's in Detroit. And
So Valpo, here's your semifinal matchup against the 4-seed Detroit.
That's ridiculous. And we talk about it. I don't think you can overstate how bad of an idea it is to take the tournament off of campus sites. How much fun was this specific league, this particular league, the last several years because of that format? And I just think they ruined it. They took the stakes out of the regular season.
I couldn't agree more. Over in the Ivy League, I do live in New Jersey, and New Jersey basketball, when it comes to the top team there, Rutgers, it's a little bit rough right now. But I got to say that the state of New Jersey basketball beyond that is looking pretty good right now. And we'll start in the Ivy League with Princeton.
Yeah.
Sitting here at 7-3.
Kind of a surprising 7-3, at least to me. I was not expecting this.
Maryland took it to them over the weekend, but I kind of expected that. Interesting test coming up next week at Miami. I think that if they can at least stay close to the Hurricanes, it may show that they've got a shot to be here this year. But beyond Princeton, David, what about this Harvard team and what they've done the last 2 days?
You almost wonder if they just didn't know that the season was starting back in November. I mean, they came out, they looked horrendous, losing to UMass, Boston College. I mean, I think they're going to need a waiver after that Boston College. Holy Cross. I mean,
Holy Cross team this year.
Yeah. And they went into the bean pot and just got beaten up.
But then I think it turned around when they lost the game to Kansas. They played really well. They come out after that. They beat BU, and now they've beaten BYU and Auburn, and they're going to the Diamond Head Championship on Christmas Day, potentially against Oklahoma.
Yeah. They've looked really good. And they got out. I mean, after they quit playing the Boston area teams minus BU, they've looked amazing. And they've looked better than anybody else in the conference. And because there's no conference tournament here, the fact that they're not inside the bubble doesn't really matter, because you don't have to be. You just need to finish first. A lot of the purists like that there isn't a conference tournament. I kind of wish there was one, for the simple reason that it makes November and December matter a little more. But as far as what they've looked like on the court over the last couple of weeks, much less the last couple of days, they've looked better than anybody else in this league.
They really have the last 2 days, at least. We'll see. I mean, I don't expect them to win tomorrow, especially if they're playing Oklahoma, but we'll see what happens.
Right.
Let's turn to the Metro Atlantic. As we discussed New Jersey hoops, and maybe not St. Peter's, but the Monmouth Hawks.
Yes.
Do it again and again and again.
I want to get your take on this because this is an anomaly. And I know that when we do our mock committees at the end of the year, we always preach, do not think categorically, we're our own committee. But even if you operate categorically, there is no category here. They have 8 wins away from home. They have 6 true road wins already. There's teams, I'd say close to half the teams that will make the NCAA won't have 6 true road wins.
You're talking these road wins, including a win at UCLA, a win at Georgetown, a win over a Big Ten school, and plus neutral court wins over Notre Dame and USC.
Yeah, and everybody's like, I know Cornell isn't a big deal. Well, Cornell had not lost at home. Winning at Cornell is a hell of a lot harder than winning a bye game at home. I submit, and I know that they stubbed their toes at Canisius, but
I don't care.
Why not seed them high? Why not look at them at the 5-6 line right now?
I think if you're making a bracket right now, you have to look at them there. There are other teams you could be looking at in the 5-6 range that have stubbed their toes against teams just as bad as Canisius is.
Yeah.
It's not an awful Canisius team. It's probably a top four or five finisher in the conference.
Yeah.
They have one more road trip coming up at Army, which is a little bit interesting next week too.
Very interesting. Play. And I think there's just this mental stigma. When you see a team like a Monmouth win a big game early in the season, it's just, oh, isn't that exciting? This little team played great and beat a good team. Well, this is not a little team that beat a good team, I don't think. I mean, when you've won 8 games away from home before you even start conference play, that's remarkable. And start looking at our own bracket projections, and I know you hate them this early. Nobody else has won 8 games away from home. Nobody.
I can't argue with it. I mean, they're going to face the fact that they've got to keep it up in conference play. Conference play, these are teams that know them a little bit better, so that they've played twice a year every year. Especially, I'm still looking at this Iona team. Iona stubbed their toes with UC Santa Barbara. Mm-hmm. Yesterday, AJ English has been out. He's still out. If he gets back healthy, I mean, he's a world of difference for Iona. He scored 46 points against Fairfield earlier this year.
Yeah.
he's a pretty good player. So if when he gets healthy, I think this Iona team becomes very dangerous. They're not very dangerous without him right now, though.
Yeah, but this is no small thing. Eight wins away from home, 6 true road wins already. That's incredible.
Yeah.
And if the committee says, well, you need to get out and play, they need to reward them. First, they deserve it. And secondly, they need to prove a point.
Well, let's see what happens. Let's see where they fall in the seat line. But if they finish in first place in this conference, and even if they lose 3, even 4 games in the regular season in this conference,
I think
they're a tournament team still. I think they're in. I mean, they're sitting here with a number 24 strength of schedule. That's pretty much what their non-conference strength of schedule is going to be. That's good, really good.
Yeah,
I think they're there. Mid-American, what do you like here so far, if anything?
Akron, I kind of like them. Northern Illinois, really. This is not the Mid-American that we're used to seeing. It seems like all the way up until a couple years ago, you had teams that went out, played hard schedules, and went down swinging in these, losing in overtime the ranked teams on the road. This year, they kind of went to the bakery, and I don't think they're any better off for it. Kent State's pretty good. Akron's pretty good. But I think what you see is a lot of parity. And if a team, particularly in the East, where you have Akron, Ohio, Kent, Bowling Green, if somebody can run away from that group, I think we have to look at them strongly. But I don't think anybody will. This conference beats itself up pretty good.
Yeah, the Mid-American has not gotten that large bid since 1999, but
they've had teams inside the bubble.
They've had teams inside the bubble, and they've had teams that have been on the bubble.
Yeah.
It's not there this year.
Right.
Over in the MEAC.
Oh, boy. In the MEAC, but oh, Lord.
I'm looking at all the power ratings right now. RPI, KenPom, even the ESPN's BPI. Hampton has an RPI inside the top 200. That's the only sub 200 number for anybody in the conference.
Anybody in any power rating.
In any power rating is Hampton's 186 RPI right now.
Well, Dayton treated them well last year. They won a game, and I hope they enjoy their trip back.
Yeah, it's an ugly league at this point, and I don't know what else we could do other than just move on to the Missouri Valley.
Yes.
And I got to ask this question. What if you were picking a field right now or looking at resumes right now, what do you do about this Wichita State team?
Well, up until the loss this weekend, I was starting to like them a lot. Last time I did a field was 2 weeks ago. John Stalica did the most recent one. He left them out. I don't know how far out they were, but I barely had them in mind. At this moment in time, I think they're out. Now, having said that, they're definitely good enough to lift the weight that they need to lift from now until the end to get back inside the bubble and maybe safely inside of it. But
well, let me ask you, how do you get safely inside the bubble when your best non-conference wins are going to be home wins over Utah, which does count, and UNLV? You have no non-conference wins of note on the road. They did beat St. Louis on the road, but that's not of note. Yeah. Everything else you have to do is in conference. And yes, Northern Iowa's pretty good. Yes, Evansville's pretty good. But that's it. That's only four more games.
Yeah, well, I think it depends on what the committee is going to value. And in the past, they've given a lot of credit to teams that have beaten teams that have gone on the road and beaten teams that are strong home teams that are snake pits. This conference is full of them. Southern Illinois, not a tournament team, but they're tough to beat at home. If you go in there and win, you deserve some credit. Same with the Trees, same with Evansville. I think that they can build up their profile by amassing road wins against decent but not good teams that are tough to beat at home.
Well, I think they have to win the regular season title in this league. They've got to win it outright.
Oh, I would agree with that.
Okay.
But in doing so, wouldn't they have to win some tough road games along the way?
Well, maybe not. If you lose twice and it's the road game at Evansville and the road game at Northern Iowa, your two toughest tests.
Yeah.
Yeah, you've won at Loyola and you won at Indiana State, but is that enough? I'm not certain. I'm just not certain. On the other hand, do they just say, well, we're going to really discount that what happened out at the AdvoCare because Fred Van Vliet was out for those games?
And I would not like that if they did. It's one thing to consider it. I think that that's the word, and who knows where the sweet spot is, but you can't just discount it. I mean, you did the team did play the games. So I don't know.
Northeast Conference, probably another conference that's heading nowhere. Although I do need to give a little score update here as we record this. Fairleigh Dickinson is down 1 point at Rutgers. So here's another one of those Jersey teams stepping up. It's a pretty ugly league from what we've seen so far. I think it's going to be fun during conference play. During conference play. And other than Central Connecticut State and maybe Sacred Heart, I think anybody can win this league worth still.
Yes, and I don't think either of those teams can win the league.
No. Especially not the Central Connecticut team.
Right.
Although we do want to give a shout out to them. They did pick up their first win of the season, knocking off Massachusetts Lowell over the weekend, a UMass Lowell team that beat Boston College. So you can do a little math there.
And that really hurts their centenary chances.
It really does. They are they're close to eliminated from the centenary at this point.
Right, yes.
We're going to be talking a little bit centenary in a few minutes here, actually, but let's talk about a couple other leagues first. The Ohio Valley Conference. I still think we both think this Belmont team is the best team in the league, although they have not played nearly as well as we thought they would this season. Now coming off a loss tonight. A loss over the weekend at Cleveland State. Very disappointing loss there.
It is, and that's the best way to sum it up. Still the best team in the league. Nowhere near the bubble. They'll need the automatic bid.
Right. The Patriot League, I think I gave this Army team a little bit of a black cat here when I picked them in my under-the-radar top 10 last week. Was really liking the way they were playing. And then they go and they lose at home to Marist.
Yes.
It was not a loss, a good game at all. Now, I still like this Army team. I still think they can win this conference, but I was very disappointed in that game.
Yeah. I still, I mean, I think they can win it as well. I think that once, oh man, and again, this is just one of those leagues that it's basically filler until conference play starts. This league does it right, campus sites all the way through for the conference tournament, so there's stakes to each game. But up until then, you're just kind of waiting. You're waiting really for the second season to start if you're a team in this league.
And for most of these teams, there's only one or two non-conference games left, and we'll be getting right into it. So we've pretty much hit that point here.
Yeah.
In the Southern, Chattanooga, still winning. Knocked off both Kennesaw and Radford over the last week. Now out of 10-2. Still the huge road win at Dayton. They won at Illinois. They won at Georgia. Only somewhat bad loss is a loss at Louisiana Monroe. I don't think it's an awful Louisiana Monroe team.
It's not.
I can certainly excuse that. And if this team can roll through conference play with no more than probably two losses heading into the conference tournament, I think they're a tournament team.
And I agree with that. I mean, if they roll into the conference tournament with only four losses and the meet that they have on their profile, the win at Dayton, the win at Illinois, and the win at Georgia, I think that that's enough. There's two other teams I'd like to mention nowhere near the tournament. Mercer got blown out at Ohio State. That was kind of surprising, but they're having a much better season than expected. This program, even by under the radar standards, it's a little bit undervalued because it seems like they had that great season a year or a few years back where they won the league and then beat Duke in the round of 64. The year before that, they were really good as well. Winning in the NIT against Tennessee. Here they are again, having another good year. And Samford is one of the most improved teams in the country.
David, I know you hated to see it happen, but they actually went out and beat Tim Miles' Nebraska team over the weekend. But now I think this is a little bit interesting, though. Did you see who their next game is against?
I will see that in a second.
Coming up on Tuesday, December 29th, they have a home game against college known as Miles.
Yes.
Now, is this Miles again?
Oh, man. Oh, boy.
I don't know who it is. It is to Miles. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I like his chances a lot better if he's not with his team. Oh, God. Anyway.
Southland Conference. We've been very disappointed in the Stephen F. Austin team. They lost another game. They were actually in the game a little bit with Arizona State, though.
Yeah. I think they'll run through the league. I know Corpus Christi's kind of sprinted ahead of everybody else in the out-of-conference. I still think Stephen F. SFA will run through the league. They'll probably finish the season with just the four losses, and everybody will once again be wild with all their sub-200 wins. I think that they are good enough to dominate sub-200 teams. I've never thought that they weren't. I just don't seem to value them as much as the rest of the country seems to.
They have one more interesting non-conference game coming up at UAB next week. A game, I think, between two teams that have both been very disappointing so far this season.
And that's a very good way to sum that up. They both really have.
So they're both going to attempt their best to lose this game.
Yeah.
Over in the SWAC, we've been kind of talking a lot about this conference. Still sitting here at 9 non-conference wins, their best in 25 years. Haven't picked up anything in the last week or so.
I like this Southern team. I Alabama A&M much improved. The whole conference much improved. Grambling much improved, even though they still only have the two wins.
And both non-D1.
Yeah, both non-D1. But still, you know, you have – is it one, two – I think you still have four or five teams without a Div 1 win yet. But the league is a lot better. And Southern, they can scrap. I could see Southern landing inside the first four and inside even the 16 line.
Well, one team that I am still keeping an eye on here is this Texas Southern team sitting here at 1-9, and they're going to be 1-11 in the next week when they go to Syracuse and then Baylor. They have not played a single home game yet this season.
Right.
Their home opener is December 31st against Hampton, and then they go into SWAC play. But they've played, on the road, just cashing the paychecks.
Yeah, that's what they've been doing.
I think that when it comes to conference play, this team will be able to start winning some games, though.
Mm-hmm.
The other team I wanted to mention here is the Mississippi Valley State Delta Devils.
Yeah.
David, through one of the quirks in scheduling, most teams, you know, we've discussed this before, that you get 29 games in your regular season. You can get it up to 31 if you play in a four-game exempt tournament, which Mississippi Valley State did.
Or 30, because the conference tournament is the 30th game. So the Ivies, when there was an independent, you're allowed to play as many as 30. But yes,
Right. But Mississippi Valley State, being in a conference that has a conference tournament, can play 31 regular season games plus the conference tournament. However, next week they're going to Hawaii. And there is a special rule that says if you play a game in Hawaii, it doesn't count against your schedule.
Yes.
Just like in football, it doesn't come into play as much in basketball. But as a result, Mississippi Valley State actually has a 32-game season this year.
Yes.
Plus the conference tournament. Sitting here at 0-13, they have a shot to do something historic.
Yes.
0-33.
Oh, it would be amazing. And it would be this. They would win the centenary if they did that. I don't see how they could not.
They're
talking about losing to Prairie View twice, to Alcorn twice. I mean, they will have earned that award.
But you're talking about losing as many games as possible to lose, and I don't think anybody's ever gone 0-33 yet. We're going to have to get our staff to research this. But,
right, yeah.
0-33, I believe, would be the worst season ever by anybody.
So good luck to them as they try to do that. Oh, I love the centenary.
The Southland Conference, South Dakota State, a team we've been talking up a lot lately.
The Summit, I'm assuming you mean.
Oh, I'm sorry, the Summit League. I apologize. The Summit League. We've been talking up South Dakota State a lot. Disappointing loss last night at Weber State. 99-95. It was a lot worse than that. They made a big run late in the game, had a shot to tie it, but couldn't do it.
And again, North Dakota State had some disappointing losses. Western Illinois has not been able to hold on, and plus their win at Wisconsin, while still really good, isn't enough to keep them on the surface or in the bubble without them blowing through the rest of everything. I think it's a one-bid league. I think that they're – now, having said that, if this conference lands on the 13 or 14 line, I do think they're capable of really squeezing somebody. But I do think it's a one-bid league.
I agree. I think South Dakota State, even if they pretty much run the table, only a couple losses the rest of the way, is going to need to win the Summit League tournament. But I agree with you. They're probably looking at a 13 type of seed, maybe even squeeze up to the 12 line, and it could be a very, very dangerous out.
Yeah.
Sun Belt, Little Rock and Arlington. Little Rock finally loses a game at Texas Tech again, who we've now mentioned for the second time tonight.
I still really like this Little Rock team. I think that there is room for them inside the bubble. I think there is for Arlington as well. And how about Georgia State? I don't think there's a quieter 7-2 team in the country right now. They did have sort of an ugly loss at UAB, and they haven't really beaten anybody of extreme note. But much better than I expected, considering last year we thought they were going to be great. They were terrible for most of the season, but then really hit they played up to their ceiling in the NCAA tournament. They've been way better than I've expected this year.
My problem with Georgia State, they did not play in an exempt tournament, so they only have 29 games a season. You're playing in the Sun Belt as a 20-game regular season, which I don't like. We've discussed that before. Yes. If you only have 9 regular season games, why are you scheduling Middle Georgia State and Emmanuel College?
Right.
That means they played 7 non-conference games on the entire season. Their non-conference season is already done. And they didn't give them a shot. They didn't really give themselves a shot at all here, other than to win the conference tournament.
Yeah, they did not.
And especially coming off of what they did last year. West Coast Conference, as we mentioned at the top of the show, we're not going to be discussing BYU or Gonzaga, but I think we have to have a little talk once again about this St. Mary's program.
Yeah, 9-1, and again, they did it going to the bakery and playing at home. You have to look at them. They went to Cal, lost, but looked good in the game. They blew through their conference opener at St. Mary's. They'll have to beat Gonzaga and BYU, and they'll have to beat one of them twice, I think, to really feel safe. And I don't know, it's exacerbating. It's frustrating when you see programs not give themselves a chance.
Right. They didn't. Their second road game of the season is actually coming up tonight as we record this here Wednesday evening at Santa Clara. But all their road games, are conference games other than that Cal game. So
yeah,
it's really I mean, you got to go on the road a little bit here.
Yeah,
just a little bit.
Even I mean, it's the opposite in this. We can't get anybody to play us. We have no choice. Our only option is to stay at home and play by games. Only bullshit.
Thank you. We promised at the top of the show. We finally gotten there. David, let me ask you a question here.
Yes.
If you win an event called the Global Classic or Global Sports Classic, does that make you the best team on the globe?
It does. I mean, by definition, it does. And that is exactly what the team of the people did. And they picked up another notable win away from home. They now have wins at San Diego State and on a neutral floor against a Houston team. And it's time to turn up the heat on the NCAA again.
It really is. They only have two losses, that overtime loss to Nebraska Omaha and the loss where they got we don't talk about that Louisville game anymore. But
that didn't happen, yeah.
They've got only two non-conference games left before the start of conference play, although they step out of conference a couple times during the course of the season. But at SIU Edwardsville next week, home against Bethune-Cookman, then WAC play. This team has absolutely looked like the best team in the WAC by far so far. Yes. And they absolutely should be given a chance to play in the NCAA tournament.
Right. And here's what we're going to do. We have some very productive holiday time for you. Let's see if we can get it here. This is a web page that we have created. If you're watching this on the Hoops HD page, right below us, you'll see a link. It will take you to this
right
page.
Right
down there. It will take you to this page. And what you do, and this is Howard Beal, who is a very silly, angry man. And you can just type in memes. Is that the way you pronounce it, meme? Memes?
Memes. I think it's memes.
Yeah, yeah. And we are going to tweet these to the NCAA. And it's just, here we go here.
Well, there we go. How can I have a Merry Christmas if the NCAA won't let the Lopes play?
And then, yeah, you upload it. You generate it. And, I messed up.
You know select language there. Select language. Yeah.
Okay.
Why you know select language?
Okay, and then you generate it. It's just this simple. Yeah, and it's generating. See, there it is. Yeah. And then you can just tweet this out, and we're going to do this as well.
You just grab that link right there underneath where it says Lopes Play, and you just highlight it, grab it.
Yeah, tweet it out.
Let's get your tweet.
Yeah. And then we're just going here, and then you see at Twitter, you just tweet this at the NCAA, and this is important, and then you want to use the hashtag, this is important too, at the NCAA, hashtag Lopes Waiver, and then you just put the image in there, and we're actually doing this live on the air right now. There it is, and there it is. It's off to the NCAA.
Everybody, go look at David Griggs. He just tweeted out. How can I have a Merry Christmas if the NCAA won't let the Lopes play? Go and grab these memes. Let's tweet them.
Yeah, we're going
to tweet other messages. You don't have to tweet our message. You can make your own message out.
Yeah, make your own messages. Play. And again, there's no games tomorrow, so you have all the time in the world. You can spend the whole day doing this. Right. So, I mean, this is one of the other – I mean, this is what Christmas is all about. This is a chance to really do something important for a change. Most people, Christmas, I mean, they spend it drinking and spending time with their family. This is a chance to do something really important.
This is more important than spending time with your family?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
And we have something else here, Chad. I hate to spring this on you, but where'd it go? I can't seem to. Okay, here we go. Do you see on the screen now we have our survival board? I have made a little bit of an adjustment, and again, under the radar, we're going to scrub this. Right now, everybody's in italics because everybody's being considered. Toward the end of December, maybe by the next show, we're probably going to take some of the teams out of italics. But if we go down to the WAC, you'll notice right there, Grand Canyon, pending a waiver, has been added. So it's official now. Tell the audience about this page.
Well, this is the most important page. The NCAA Tournament Committee. You see, up here, here at Hoops HD, we actually run the real NCAA Tournament Committee.
Yeah.
And the NCAA appoints a committee of their own to try to mimic us. And then in a consideration for the time they actually spend, they actually let that field be the actual field. When that committee is trying to mimic us, what they do is they go onto Hoops HD in the actual committee room there, and they see who can we consider for the NCAA tournament. And they look at our tournament survival board, and they will see teams here. And if they're in italics, or if they're anywhere on the board, they may be considered. But if they're in italics or if they're in bold, that means it's a team that they should absolutely be discussing. And Grand Canyon, as of right now, is a team that if the committee meets next week in a preliminary meeting, discusses, says, who should we discuss about this year? The Lopes are in that list.
Right.
And they will go here and they look at it.
Yeah, and we'll be scrubbing this a little bit. Like, no one's coming off because no one's been eliminated yet. But I think you're going to see some teams become unitalicized. But the Lopes are there. They're on this. This is available to the actual NCAA committee. They have the internet in the room, so they can access this site, which of course they are.
And we have it on good authority that they do look at this site. Because David told us that last time he snuck in there, he actually saw them doing it.
Yeah. So, all right.
But let's move on to a quick preview of some of the upcoming games of note. Tomorrow, Christmas Eve, no games on, so we're all be tweeting at the NCAA.
Right.
Friday, the final round of the Diamond Head, which means that while watching those games, we'll all be tweeting at the NCAA.
Mm-hmm.
Saturday, there's one game at noon, Louisville, Kentucky. Take 2 hours off, watch the game, then start tweeting at the NCAA again.
Yeah, and you got to tweet down there. The link is right below us, right down there.
Right down there.
Yeah.
It's coming up Sunday. We mentioned this game already, though. Important under the radar game, an interesting one at least. Middle Tennessee State and South Dakota State playing a game in Sioux Falls. It's called the Sioux Falls Showcase. It's actually a two-night event. That's the first game coming up on Sunday. I'm looking forward to that game. I think that is a good one.
Yeah, I am too, and I think it's highly important because the bubble's a long shot for both of them, but it's still not outside the realm of possibility. But if you almost feel like if one of them is going to do it, they'll need that win to do it.
Yeah. Now, after you spend Sunday night tweeting at the NCAA again, coming up on Monday, the second game of that Sioux Falls Showcase is Florida Gulf Coast and South Dakota. Not quite as good of a game, but that big game that coming up on Monday afternoon is Monmouth at Army. I'm really looking forward to that one.
Yeah. And that one is going to be good. That's going to be real good. And again, Army, not the easiest place to go and win. I don't think they've lost but one game at home this year.
We also have another really interesting game coming up Monday evening. Stony Brook, who we talked about as our pick from the America East, as at NJIT. I think that this could be the second really good game of the night. So
yes, very much so.
I'm also taking a look at keeping an eye on the New Mexico State at Wichita State. Really, Wichita needs that game desperately.
Yeah, that night. New Mexico State, it's a lost cause. We're going to get just one more. Do we have time for one more since we're talking about
it? Okay, go ahead.
Okay, here we go.
And as we wait, anything?
Oh wait, I didn't have – I'm sorry, did not successfully share this.
Okay.
Let's see it now. Oh, okay. There it is. And then, you click your language.
I'm mad as hell because the Lopes can't play. There it is, folks.
Yeah. And again, you save this, and then we're tweeting this out.
Okay. And as David tweets that out, just want to mention a few other games here. Monday night also, the second of two matchups this season between Valpo and Belmont, this game at Belmont. If Belmont's going to get back and it's going to prove that they're a good team, they need this game. But I think this game is really important for Valpo, even more so than Belmont at this point.
I think it is too, because again, with Valpo, they're too far outside the bubble to get back on it or in it. So
a couple other games just quickly of note coming up on Tuesday night. Siena's at Vermont, Stephen Foss at UAB, Northeastern's at NC State, a very winnable game for Northeastern. Not that they're, not that it's a slam dunk win, but it's a type of game that I think they can win. It could help them out a ton. We also mentioned the Central Michigan William & Mary game. But, David, game that I wanted to bring up here for Tuesday night, two of your favorite teams, Southern Mississippi, who is one of the worst teams in D1, and ineligible this year, so I don't think you even believe they exist. But they are hosting one of our favorite teams from last season, Southeast Oklahoma State.
Oh, yes.
For those of us that forget, can you remind us what Southeast Oklahoma State did last year?
They beat Frank Haith, which you think would be a pastime. You'd think it would be what everybody was doing, because if you want to be cool, that's just what you do. But they actually went to Tulsa and beat Frank Haith. And how costly was it? Tulsa doesn't lose that game. They're probably pretty far inside the bubble. It was a horrendously damaging loss.
It was, and Southeast Oklahoma State has a chance to do something pretty impressive here, but beat D1 teams in back-to-back seasons.
Yes.
Wanted to move over to our top 10 lists now, and let me start off with my top three. I think our top two probably match. I've got Monmouth number one and Valpo number two.
Yeah, and I have them in that order. We talked extensively about Monmouth. I'm starting to think that they might deserve to be ranked in more than just the under-the-radar top 10.
And I agree with you, and I would not be surprised to see them, if not next week, then the week after. I know some media folks have already been tweeting out that they are ranking Monmouth in their top 25, so we'll see how that plays out. Yeah. At number three, I kind of threw this team here. I didn't know where to put them, but I have Wichita State at number three.
And they could end up there. I think that I think that Wichita will play their way inside the bubble because of what we said earlier in the show. I have them a little lower. I have them at number six. I still really like this Little Rock team. I know they went to Texas Tech and lost, but they've won every game outside of that. It isn't I hate the term good loss, but it isn't a bad loss in the sense that it's going to wreck their profile or their season. I like them. Next, we had the same two. We had Chattanooga and Northern Iowa, 4-5.
Yeah, I have Chattanooga, Northern Iowa, 4-5. I have Little Rock down at 7. I have Evansville in here at 6 in between.
Yeah. Yeah, and I have Evansville at 7.
My eighth team is this Arlington team. They've been in my top 10. I can't knock them out, even though they haven't been able to have note the past couple weeks.
Yeah, and they're really good, too. The South, the Sun Belt, it's certainly better than CUSA and in some other leagues that it's typically behind. They've got three pretty good teams this year. One of them's Georgia State, who we talked about that probably isn't good enough. But Little Rock and Arlington certainly are. One or both of them could be in the discussion.
Right. Number nine, I have the team of the people, the Grand Canyon Antelopes.
The people, absolutely.
And the best team in the globe, the global.
Yeah, the best team on the globe, and we are working to get them a waiver. The link right down there, right? Click it right now and tweet at the NCAA right down there.
Who'd you have at 8 and 9?
I had South Dakota State at 8. I had Grand Canyon at 9. And I actually had Oakland at 10. We talked about them earlier. I know you're not as big on them. I have no problems with Hawaii at 10.
That's why I've got Hawaii at 10 based on that record, based on the nice win over Northern Iowa, who I've ranked above them. I think that Hawaii belongs on this list for now, even if they lose to Oklahoma tonight. I did throw a few honorable mentions out there, including that South Dakota State. I also think it's worth mentioning St. Mary's and worth mentioning William & Mary. Louisiana Tech maybe also.
Yeah.
But on that note, David, any other thoughts for the evening here?
No, just use your time productively over the holiday. Do something meaningful. Tweet at the NCAA. We need to get the Lopes this waiver.
And
that's my biggest thought.
I have one final thought here. I was very conflicted this past weekend when Monmouth played at Rutgers. As you know, I went to Rutgers. I've been following this Monmouth team. I've gone to a few of their games the last couple of years. I've been really... And when the game ended and Monmouth had won it, I thought for a little bit, and then suddenly I said, wait a second, you know, let me double check what school I did go to. And I looked on my wall, and there it is, Monmouth State University, Rutgers. I made a mistake.
Wow. So I did go to Monmouth. This whole time, you mistook where you went to college.
Yeah, I don't know how I made this mistake. We could just ignore that middle line there that says something about Rutgers on it. But
yes.
Yeah, Monmouth, the State University of New Jersey. So I was rooting for the right team.
Okay, well, that's good. And again, just so everybody can see it, I've got the Lopes waiver hashtag up. But, yeah, Monmouth is really good. It's something that you rarely see, a team from New Jersey that might get in on the first ballot.
Yeah, but on that note, we want to wish everybody a happy holidays, and we'll talk to you again real soon.